The Husker Doc Talk podcast is presented by the Remington Trophy. This year's Remington Trophy celebration dinner is Saturday, January 18th at the Rococo Theater in Lincoln. Wisconsin's Tyler Biaz is this year's winner. Former Husker Dominic Raiola will also be at the dinner to accept the Ford Legends Award. For more information, go to RemingtonTrophy.com. Dr. Rob and I do want to thank our sponsors who make this podcast possible. The beer we drink comes from the Infusion Brewing Company. Check out the new Infusion Little Bohemia Beer Hall located at 1406 South 13th Street in Omaha. It's at the old Bohemian Cafe. Ticket Express has the tickets you need for any event. They also brought you Ticket Talk all season long. Visit them online at TicketExpress.com. Scotty at Husker Hounds has what you need for any occasion. And I do mean any occasion. Three locations in Omaha or online at HuskerHounds.com. And how about Husker Max? Every week during the season, they post our content. It's because David Max and his team that a lot of you can find us on a weekly basis, and we thank them for that. This is the Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy, 2019, episode 26. Dr. Rob, we're back in the studio one more time for 2019.
You're back from Italy.
I'm back from Italy.
Nice.
And refreshed, full of just dumb mistakes that I've made since I've been back.
You're not dead. You caught influenza.
Caught influenza.
Hopefully we're far enough out from a symptomatology standpoint, you're still not shedding virus all over.
And the good thing is I don't use that microphone, so you're not talking directly into the microphone that I use. The microphone that I'm using is just a germ cesspool as we speak. There's a couple of things that we need to catch up on. And first is you had me really worried earlier in the week when you sent me a tweet which said, hey, people can't access the podcast.
Oh, I had, yeah, we were getting blown up a little bit there.
And so I think I was on a plane. Matter of fact, I think I was sitting in the Paris airport when that happened. And I'm like, what the hell's going on? So I went to the app and I couldn't access the podcast. And then it was like one of those weird things you see, you know, in the movies where you see data being deleted in front of your very eyes.
Yeah.
I went to the website and I pulled it up and I watched all 5 or 6 years just disappear in front of my very.
Oh, I would have freaked out.
I was in a sheer panic because I'm like, oh, my God, I haven't backed these up anywhere else. I'm trusting cloud storage. I'm trusting Podbean, which I have been using since we launched this podcast. And I'm like, oh my God. So I wrote customer service and
they responded back.
Responded back to me.
That was actually cool to see.
Only to find out that I didn't pay the bill. But see, here's what I was upset about. I said they never once told me that my bill was coming due. I've always had an automatic withdrawal, but what happened was I got a new debit card a couple months ago.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
And so, but they never let me know.
We've had that happen. I was going to say, you almost like your Amazon account or my kids got the Microsoft account, one of those. I always get a notification when that happens, though.
It never happens. And so they're like, you need to check the spam filter. I said, I checked the spam filter. I checked everywhere. You did not send me an email letting me know that all this stuff was going to be erased.
So they didn't erase it. They just kind of hit it.
They hit it. But it was really weird because when I pulled it up, it like just all disappeared. And the minute I hit pay and got the receipt, logged back on, everything was right there. Boom. Magically.
Ah, there you go.
Well, you live and you learn, right? And that is pay your bills. It's funny because I've gotten more criticism this year. Because
you say that a lot.
I do. I say that an awful lot. 2019 will be the year I get remembered for a lot of things, most of them not good. But with this podcast this year, I got criticized a lot because we structured it a little differently. We had all our sponsors up top, and people were just making fun of me and criticizing us making a little money off this. And I wouldn't say you and I don't get rich doing this by any means.
We get paid a little, which is kind of nice.
Yeah, but there's other bills
more,
to pay.
I do it more because I can raid your fridge for beer. And
yeah,
we got Infusion hooking us up.
You see the equipment. This stuff's not free. You see the storage that I pay for. I've got equipment that I've got to maintain and keep. And yeah, we make a little bit of money off this. I'm not going to apologize for it, but I've been called a money grabber. And I'm like, wow, I don't think that really, if I was a money grabber, there would be a sponsor every 3 minutes on this podcast.
Or as I like to put it, most podcasts.
Yeah. I mean, listen to Joe Rogan. That guy will spend the first 10 minutes talking about all his
Well, I mean,
sponsors.
We talked about a handful of, we were talking about Revisionist History.
Yeah.
Still a great podcast. Yeah. I just listened to one yesterday.
Malcolm Gladwell does
like every 7 minutes.
Yeah.
There's another ad.
And it's like 3 minutes long.
Yeah. They're long ads.
Yeah.
They're almost entertaining, I hate to say.
I appreciate, you know.
Yeah, you don't realize with Malcolm, you don't realize it's an ad till he's like 90 seconds into it.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of the genius of it. The great thing about our sponsors, the Remington Trophy, Ticket Express, Infusion Brewing, Husker Hounds, and Husker Max, they've been with us basically since the beginning.
Yeah,
This is really nothing new. The only thing that's changed is the way we put the sponsors in the podcast. We put it all at the beginning.
Which, and you used to do it kind of spread out throughout.
Yeah, yeah. Which I, you know, we could do that, I guess. I could go back to that. But I thought I want to give as much value as possible to a sponsor because, well, I mean, they are supporting us. And the weird thing is, this is our 26th podcast of 2019.
We did a lot. We've done a lot of podcasts.
That is the most we've ever done in 1 year. So that means over.
What was the next highest?
Oh, I think we've only gone, well, we've hit 20 maybe, okay. 20, 21. But 26 is a lot. That means we've spent over, you know, half the weeks together. At least. And we usually don't do that. We did a lot. Hopefully we can hit maybe 30 next year. But just know that this podcast doesn't exist without our sponsors. Speaking of the Remington Trophy, the big celebration coming up in January. Was it January 12th, 18th. I got to go back and look. I haven't even looked.
I should know this. It locked into the calendar. So.
Yeah. But guy from Wisconsin won it. It's the 18th at the Rococo Theater, 6:30 the cocktail hour, 7:30 the program and dinner. And we featured this guy earlier, Tyler, how do you say it? Biadazi? Is that how you say
it? I think it's just Biadaz.
Biadaz?
Yeah.
So. He was a consensus dude, man. He's a
and you
called this even before.
I thought he had it. Even early in the year, I thought he had it. Yeah. He was kind of the guy I thought was the front runner from the get-go. And sometimes it's hard to tell because you'll have a year where there's two or three really, really solid centers. I remember there was one year. Oh boy. There was one year, I think it was there was a guy from Oregon, a guy from Oklahoma, and a guy from Alabama. And the guy from Auburn, this would have been, I think it was, and I thought it was the guy from Alabama who won it that year. I thought it was 2017. Yeah. I'll have to double check. But sometimes it can get really hard to pick because you'll have a handful of guys who are all really, really good. And there were some great candidates this year. I thought Tyler from the get-go was the guy that I watched play early on in the season. And it was just, God, if this guy even remotely maintains this level of play, he's got this hands down.
I'm anxious to see Dave. We haven't seen Dave forever.
It's been a while.
It has been. Maybe we do Shucks Run with Dave. I don't know. I mean,
let me know.
Because when he comes back, he's so busy, you know.
Yeah, let me know. I mean, he loves that place.
He does. He does. And, you know, he gets his homies together, gets his brothers together, and they can eat. Those guys eat.
There's going to be a Felici, a Feynman might show up.
Another Remington.
Like seven other random South Omaha people are going to walk by, see him, and come by and say hi.
Another thing that I got to admit to that I screwed up big time was Twitter can get you in a lot of trouble, Rob. Twitter can get you in a lot of trouble.
I've kind of like bit it a couple of times, but usually not as big as this one.
Well, you know, I know. I screwed up really bad. And that's why I got to send an apology out because CJ Beathard's brother was stabbed to death in
horrible tragedy.
Horrible tragedy. And on one of the Twitter posts, a guy by the name of
No. Just there was a guy we're going to.
Well, I want to say his business because people wrote negative reviews.
Okay.
So a guy who had a similar name as the guy I'm going to talk about wrote a disgusting tweet, right? I did a quick Google search, went, oh, that guy's in Omaha. Oh, I better post that and send a message. Well, Todd Wrench of Wrench Home Inspection Services was not that guy who wrote the tweet. And I screwed up big time. Big time to the fact where people went on and wrote negative reviews, and I don't like to see that. And I know that I led to that. if you did that, go on, take it off, because I did something bad, and I apologize for that. And I hope, Todd and I talked a little bit on Facebook today, and he was I don't know, say he wasn't happy with me, but he was. The Christmas spirit was with him. Let's put it that way. He was much nicer than I probably would have been to myself. So when you need home inspection services, go to Todd Wrench of Wrench Home Inspection Services. He may even get next year, Rob, a complimentary sponsorship of this podcast.
I'm okay with that.
I think so, too. We may give Todd just a complimentary sponsorship of the podcast. To make up for my stupidity.
Which I got to say, I did see that tweet. A lot of people posted it.
Yes. I wasn't the only one.
No, I know. And I saw it, and Todd's a guy here in Omaha.
Yep.
It's a family that has a number of businesses in town, a well-known name in Omaha.
Yep.
And the first thought... I'm chastising you a little bit.
You should.
Because the first thought that went through my head was, there's no way one of these guys would have put that out there. And I'm like, I need to take a look at this. So I looked at the guy that posted it. He, at the point in time I saw it, he already had his account locked. Had not deleted it yet, which I think is going to be coming. But he had locked it. But you can still go to his account page, see the main banner photo. You can see the avatar photo. And I expanded and opened up the guy's avatar photo. It looks like a 19-year-old kid dressed like a 14-year-old kid. And when I saw it, I was like, This is not the Todd I know.
I messed that one up pretty bad. And so my apology is all I have, but I can say this. If you have time, go online, go to Google Reviews and give Todd a good review, because I contributed to his downfall of the rating, and hopefully I can contribute to getting that rating back up. You're going to keep chastising me. You're looking at me like you're disappointed in me.
I'm not angry, Trav. I'm disappointed.
And you should be. And you very much should be. While I was gone, I was in Italy in recruiting. The signing day takes
place. It happened.
It did.
Nebraska didn't die. We were worried about that. They had a great class.
And because I do. I am a huge fan of this early signing period. I remember the season would end, you'd have to wait till February for all this stuff to happen. It created much more drama than it was needed. I like this December signing period. You don't.
Initially I did. When they, cuz is this year 2 or year 3?
God, I think it's I don't
it's
know
at
the
least
answer
year that. 2 that they've yeah. had it. Initially I did. I guess the thing I don't like about it is that I think it's still I worry about it creating even more indecision, that sometimes these kids get roped into quicker decisions than they should make. And I think there's a massive, massive amount of pressure on these guys to make a decision, to make the right decision. And one of the things that I think that was nice, and I get this from a handful of other guys that I talked to when I went through this, and I gave an early commitment to Nebraska. Now, when I say early commitment, like week 6 of my senior season in high school, which at that time that was considered an early commitment. Now, I got asked by Osborne, I got offered by Osborne, 2 or 3 weeks prior to that, though. And I still took 2 or 3 weeks to think about, just make sure I was making the right decision. Now, was I not going to go to Nebraska? It's like, no, I grew up in Lincoln, Nebraska. And at that time period, it was a different place. I mean, you had kind of some pseudo guarantees about going into Nebraska. You're going to get the 9 wins a year, a bowl game, et cetera. So it was, for the most part, a slam dunk decision, and I still took 2 or 3 weeks to think about it.
Really?
I know a lot of guys that I spoke with at the time I was a kid going through this, and I've talked to a number of other parents and a number of other players, former players, going through the process, And one of the things that a number of them have said they liked was that ability, high school football season's done. You essentially have a chunk of December and all of January, because it used to be, what was it, like that very first week in February, ballpark.
Yeah, yep,
right around there. It was always first week or two in February. You kind of had a month to just sort of kick back and think about things. If you needed to sneak in one last trip to a given campus, you had the time to do that. A lot of guys I've talked to really like that. Now, initially, I liked that idea of like, oh, you can make the decision, you can go ahead, get it out of the way, and then you don't have to worry about it for the next 2 months. But what I think's happened, and I see this a little bit, is that I think it's increased the pressure to make that decision earlier. And I worry about it increasing transfer numbers. People that normally would have maybe taken a sort of a month of just plain downtime to sit and think about these things a little bit, maybe take a couple extra campus visits on their own dime just to be sure. Now you don't have that extra time to do that. And I'm not sure that's a good thing.
I heard a coach earlier say that he would like it moved up before the high school football season because most of them had already committed. And I think that's a ploy so that coaches get sick and tired of recruiting. And what I mean by
you're talking about high school coaches or college?
I heard a college coach.
Oh, I absolutely agree. I think they would love to wrap this up by the end of a kid's junior year.
Yeah.
So I think, from a coaching standpoint, I think they would like to do this as early as possible. I would throw that in there. A lot of the high school coaches, if you talk to the high school coaches, they'd like to see this happen definitively, and it is for the most part. I mean, I know Texas high school state football championships are going on right now, but I think most high school coaches definitively want to see this happen and still remain to happen after the high school season's finished. And because I even remember it, my high school coach saying he thought my level of intensity dropped a bit after I committed.
It's like, I got what I need. I don't need it anymore.
Yeah. Now in my head, I didn't think that was happening, but I think maybe I wouldn't doubt the fact that that might've happened subconsciously. But I know the high school coaches feel that if they've got a kid who's either A, undecided, or B, still kind of thinking about things a bit, I know the high school coaches like that carrot out there dangling on a stick for all those kids and would just assume nobody either A, make an offer, or B, make a committable offer till after the high school season's over.
Now, you and I don't get into recruiting a lot, or you may more than I do. I
have more so, which we've talked about it this year. Yeah. I got a nephew here in town.
And we'll get to him in a moment.
I mean, that aspect of it, and then now that I've got a son who's playing high school football, I don't say this in the sense of my own son. He's only a sophomore. He's a backup, plenty of time. But he plays for a very good high school football team here in Omaha.
Goes
to Westside. And they've got a number of seniors who are going on to play college football at some level. And they've got several other kids in the sophomore and junior class who are also going to go on to play major college football. So all of a sudden, you're kind of around it. And so when I'm around it, I mean, I hang out with these guys at team dinners and pep rallies and their parents, so on and so forth. It's something that kind of you're with and you have around you all the time. And because of that, it's something that all of a sudden becomes an interest because there's these kids. It's my son's teammates and you get to know these kids a bit and you care about them as people and you want to know what they're going through. You want to know that they're going to end up having a good result, a good experience out of this. And so you do start following it.
You know, it depends on who you listen to. I'm on Husker 24/7 right now, a national ranking of 20, a Big Ten ranking of 4.
And that's kind of the general numbers I've seen.
Yeah. Signed 23. Got two transfers coming in from Colorado State. What biggest need do you think they filled with this class?
Wide receiver, I think, was the big one, which we talked about that so much this year, the lack of wide receiver in general, especially a deep threat. I think Omar Manning was a huge get for him, and that was one that was a little unexpected, too. They got a handful of other receivers. They got two JUCO guys that I think are going to be able to jump in and play right away. It's always hard to tell how that's going to pan out, though, when you got a guy coming from a JUCO to a bigger school. Because, last year, late summer, we're sitting here like, oh, God, thank God we got Kunavai Noah. This is what a huge get for Nebraska to get this transfer kid from Cal. We really needed this guy. We all saw how that worked out in terms of on-the-field performance, and I'm sure he's a great guy. But Nebraska was asking him to play out of position for the most part. So linebacker was a big one. I think Nebraska was really going hard after those outside linebackers, guys who can potentially step up and help out with a pass rush. Offensive line was a hole that I think Nebraska's still working on. They really only got one really key guy out of this recruiting class, and that was Corcoran. I think I'm saying that right.
Yeah.
I'm going to say Turner.
Yeah. Turner Corcoran.
They got Turner out of Kansas.
Out of Lawrence. That's a big one.
Yeah. Was it Lawrence Free State?
Yep.
So, and was that, is Alex Kahn's in this recruiting class as well? Am I correct in that? Or is he next year? I mean, he's a commit.
I think he's next year.
Okay. So Turner was the big one on the offensive line, in addition to a handful of some walk-ons. Nebraska was really heavy O-line recruits last year. And actually, they've got a number of commits for the following year. Teddy Prochaska is another one out. He'll be a senior next year at Elkhorn South. But that's another – next year is going to be another big year for offensive line. So I don't think that was as big a hole that it might look at on the surface when you first look and go like, geez, where's all the offensive linemen? Last year was stocked. Next year is going to be stocked. They got a Mount Pleasant kid for 2021. Yeah. So that'll be big. So that 2021 class is going to be another good class for offensive linemen. So I like what they've done last year and then next year. As far as offensive linemen go, I thought this class, that God, they went hard after the skill guys, the wideouts, and then on defense, DBs, and that outside linebacker position.
Yeah, you break it down. One quarterback, two running backs, five receivers, two offensive linemen, seven defensive linemen, two linebackers, and five defensive backs.
Yeah, and Logan Smothers is going to be interesting. It's because you've got a quarterback situation now in Nebraska where you've got a guy where – we're going to have the photo negative of last year, where last year we were looking at this year going, oh my God, is Adrian Martinez going to win the Heisman? And this year it's going to be the exact opposite. Everybody's going to look at him and basically be like, well, I have zero expectations until he shows up and shows us what he can do. And then you've got another quarterback behind him and McCaffrey, who is the classic backup that everybody loves and thinks should be the starter. And then you've got this Logan Smothers coming in who some pundits are saying should be better than both of those guys.
Do you think McCaffrey goes plays for his dad? That's
no,
surprising. You
know? I don't think so. Now, here's the thing. So he's got, let's say, so his redshirt year stood.
Yeah.
So he's only going to be a redshirt freshman next year. Let's say Martinez rebounds. He rebounds, has two really good seasons, junior year, senior year, very solid. They're going to put McCaffrey out there on the field. I mean, he's going to be – I was watching the Saints today. I mean, I don't know. God, I don't know if you remember this. I mean, I followed it a little bit, but Taysom Hill, he was like the dual threat backup quarterback for BYU, but started a couple of half seasons for BYU. He was – I believe Taysom was the guy who threw the Hail Mary pass to beat Nebraska in Lincoln a few years ago when Nebraska played BYU. I think it was Mike Riley's first season in Lincoln. Would that have been 2015? Anyway, got drafted by the Saints. He's kind of the Saints' third-string quarterback behind Drew Brees. But then he plays wide receiver. He plays tight end. He plays slot. He plays. He carries the ball out of the backfield. He's kind of the slash. He's the old Cordell Stewart slash for the New Orleans Saints. I really envision that for McCaffrey. I think the next 2 years, assuming Adrian Martinez rebounds, and we see the Martinez that we expected to see this year but absolutely didn't, I think McCaffrey gets used in that role. We're going to see him running jet sweeps out of the backfield. We're going to see him running slot wide receiver. We're going to see him playing as a backup quarterback. We're going to see him getting taught throwing the ball in the flat and then throwing the ball downfield on trick plays. I think they're going to put McCaffrey out there, and I think McCaffrey's going to have a really fun next couple of years doing all sorts of stuff and not having to worry about being the starting quarterback, and he's still going to get to play some quarterback and then go be a two-year starter, and that's pretty darn good.
So what have you heard about Martinez's injury? Because Scott's been fairly quiet about it.
Man, everybody has been. So knee injury and a shoulder injury. And
surgery on both or one?
He had surgery on the shoulder, I know. The knee, I got to be honest with you.
Okay.
Haven't paid attention enough about the knee. The shoulder was the thing I kind of honed in on. They didn't really say exactly what it is, and my suspicion is that it's a labrum tear. Now, that's, I say that purely from being knowledge of a doctor and knowledge of having been an athlete. And, okay, what's something a guy could play through that, okay, once the damage is done, you're probably not going to make it a ton worse? And I wonder if it was just a really bad labrum tear. Repairable. And so you get it fixed and you go on. Some guys come back and do really, really well. Some guys, it's never quite the same again. So we'll see what happens. That's why I still look at Martinez, and it's going to be a big question mark. I'm going full Missouri here and saying show me. So,
You know, let's go back to the JUCO thing, because you were commenting on it, and I wanted to make a comment, but I didn't want to interrupt you. And that
it's a lot.
No,
well, it's not a lot. It's not Bill Snyder always, numbers, but it's a fair amount.
Well,
of JUCO
Bill Snyder,
guys,
I think, got more production out of any JUCO out of JUCOs than any other Division I coach that I know.
He did,
of.
But there's always a downside.
I don't disagree with you. My only analogy I was going to say is, this is why I don't like JUCOs when it came to basketball. Right, there was good talent there. However, it always seemed to take almost a full year before they got acclimated to what Division I basketball was like.
Yeah.
They couldn't even do it in the first semester. Their senior year was much better than their junior year, just because the speed of the game, the physicalness of the game, just it was completely different than what they were used to at JUCO ball.
And I think you see that in football as well. The other thing is just getting acclimated to school. There's a lot of guys who say, God, like academically, JUCO's, it's like going back to high school again. Now, I don't know that for a fact, but.
I mean, watch Last Chance U, and it does not, I know it's not totally accurate, but it doesn't paint a good light of junior college football.
No, I mean, I think it paints a good picture of a number of programs who I think to a degree are designed to be a pit stop for guys on their way as they try to get back to major college athletics.
Yeah.
And there's some JUCOs that do that and operate that way, and it's a major draw for those schools from a financial standpoint. If they can put out great football teams and send those guys on to go play major college football, it only helps them. So
I've had long conversations with Coach Strohmeyer over at Iowa Western, which they had a down year, I would say, by their terms. But I mean, junior college football is getting to be more competitive than almost any other level. I mean, the facilities they have over there now. It's
turned into its own monster.
It has.
In a way. I mean, again, you look at the Last Chance U series. There's a lot of schools like that. Now, and it kind of rotates a bit. But, I mean, man, I'm thinking back to when I was in high school. God, you had Coffeyville in Kansas. Yeah. You had Ellsworth over in Iowa. You had Snow JUCO out in Utah. I mean, you had these places that were within the JUCO ranks, powerhouses, and routinely just churned out great athletes left and right, year in and year out. The downside to JUCO ball is you've got those guys max 3 years, including a redshirt year, assuming they went to JUCO for 2 years and did not redshirt. If you get a guy who goes to JUCO for 1 year, 1 year only, you got him for 3 years plus a redshirt. I mean, it's a year of ball. So you've got limited time from these players. And I don't want to say Osborne didn't necessarily avoid JUCO guys, but, man, you better be a ball player and you better be somebody who can contribute on some level before he was going to take you on as a JUCO guy. And Osborne's take, and the thing I think Osborne worried about, and you kind of saw this at K-State, because of that time-limited aspect to it, if you had a year where, say, half a dozen really solid JUCO guys graduated, that leaves a big hole in your roster. Those guys were only there for a couple of years. So you'd see these peaks and valleys, and Kansas State was classic for this. I mean, they would go – they would have these like a run of five to seven win seasons interspersed within these runs of 8 to 10 win seasons. And then all of these really good JUCO guys would graduate and you'd have another run of 5 to 7 win season. You just kind of hit the repeat. Yeah. But you saw these peaks and valleys as these guys graduated. And even if you recruit JUCO guys, I mean, recruiting is always it's an inexact science anyway. And so it's hard to maintain a really, really consistent level of success. And believe me, I guarantee you, Osborne liked that 9-win-a-year, 10-win-a-year average that he had, and he didn't want to upset that by causing those that talent peak and valley by having a huge number of JUCO guys all the time within the program. You get a bunch of guys who are going to be there 4 years, 5 years. You can develop those guys, and it gives you kind of a lot more continuity in terms of overall talent and product you can put on the field.
Speaking of recruiting, you and I were talking earlier that your nephew's pretty involved in the recruiting process right now. No Division I offers yet, but his latest visit took you somewhat by surprise. Maybe took them by surprise.
Iowa. And I mean, they came out of nowhere, which he'd been recruited. I mean, Nebraska's been very consistent with him. He's been to a bunch of home games, last couple of spring games, that kind of thing. Wyoming's one of the other schools that's recruited him. Actually, probably harder than Nebraska has been Wyoming and Kansas State. In Kansas State, you got Kleiman, who... God, when that staff was at North Dakota State, they routinely routinely would head south and just absolutely raid the state of Nebraska for guys. Now, are you going to get the Avante Dickersons and the Teddy Prochaskas and the Xavier Betts, Xavier Watts? Are you going to get those kids to go to North Dakota State? No. But, man, you get that next run of guys, and all of a sudden you got kids looking at North Dakota State going like, God, I could go up there and start for 3 years. I don't have to redshirt. I'll graduate in 4. I'm done. Oh, and if I really think I'm good enough, I'm probably still going to have a shot at the NFL. Because you've got these teams like Northwest Missouri State, which is a Division II program.
Yeah.
You've got South Dakota State, North Dakota State, South Dakota, North Dakota – all of these schools have started churning out the kind of a slightly consistent run of NFL guys. You know, I was watching Carson Wentz play earlier. So it's not out of the realm of possibility. You can go to one of those schools, get a lot more playing time, play right away, and still have that shot at the NFL. So I think it's a legit recruiting thing. So Kleiman knows that well and has used that to good effect at Kansas State. He's still going after the Nebraska guys. His offensive line coach is Connor Riley. He was a UNO, a two-time All-American at UNO back when they still had football. Connor is very well connected within the state of Nebraska as far as those high school coaches go and does a really good job of going after the local kids. The Iowa thing popped up rather suddenly. I mean, it was just within the last few weeks. But yeah, they showed up in Omaha and went, they've gone after a bunch of Omaha kids.
So they just show up at school?
Yeah. So yeah, so when they went out to recruit, they had the, I can't remember the exact rules because you're allowed to spend X amount of time visiting in school, that kind of thing. So they stuck to those rules like a, I mean, I don't know what, but they hit Omaha and they hit a number of kids for that 2021 class hard. And Iowa has a couple of guys they've targeted in Omaha, and one of them happened to be my nephew, and they invited him up for the bowl game practices. And it's interesting because talking to my brother, they did their homework. And my brother said that's not something he's necessarily seen out of a number of other schools. And I say that in the sense that...
But that's smart, isn't it?
Oh, it's ungodly smart. My brother said he understands it's a game. He gets that. But he said you walk up to the Iowa football complex, the main building. And he said the assistant coach, who my brother's never met the guy. He said the door pops open. The assistant coach is there. John, how are you doing? Come on in. And Isaac, good to see you. Get in here. We're going to get you set up. You're going to have a great day today. And they knew about my brother. And they knew he went to Nebraska. They knew me. My dad worked almost 35 years for the University of Nebraska. They knew that. They knew the ins and outs of the fact that a lot of these times these schools, when they do the recruiting, there's some stuff that they just kind of bypass. And some of the other schools that have recruited my nephew, they just have him pay. He's an offensive lineman. And so you show up and they keep it. Now, listen, are you more tackle or more guard center? If you're like, well, two-year starting center. I think you probably ought to know that. He said you get to Iowa and they're like, hey, we know you've been the two-year starting center. If we need you at guard, would you be willing to move over to guard? I mean,
that's a quick yes?
Oh, heck yeah. That's the kind of question they're asking. It is kind of interesting, though, and I say this from a family standpoint or a recruiting a kid from Nebraska whose dad and uncle played for Nebraska. Though, I mean, one of the questions they did ask was like, hey, we know your dad and uncle played at Nebraska. We know your grandfather worked there for over three decades. Would you consider even coming to Iowa? I mean, is that within the realm of possibility?
Well, it's a good sales pitch, right? And what I mean by that is it's like, if not, let's just shake hands and call it quits.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, and it's a legit question too. I mean, Iowa doesn't want to put an offer out there and think, hey, God, we got this kid from Elkhorn South on an offer. Let's wait and see what he does while somebody else that could fill that role signs elsewhere. They want to know they've at least got a shot at you, and the interesting thing is talking to my brother and his son. I mean, one of the points he made is that, my nephew's never known Nebraska as a very good team. And my brother and I were even talking about the fact that the last time, so my nephew, he's
what, 18, right? No, 17.
16 or 17, I'd have to double check. He's a junior at Elkhorn South.
Yeah. Well, that'd make him about 17.
Yeah. So he's, oh, that's horrible. I got to double check that. Yeah, he's about 17. He's a junior. Okay. He's a junior.
Okay. If he's a...
Shut up. He's a junior. Anyway, so he's a junior at Elkhorn South. And I forgot where I was going with this. Okay, so the where would you end up going? And how you view Nebraska. No. He's never known Nebraska as a dominant team. In fact, most of his football watching life, despite being a Nebraska fan, I mean, you grow up, your dad played there. You're a bit of a Nebraska fan growing up. He's never known Nebraska as a dominant team. The last time Nebraska beat Iowa, he was in sixth grade.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm doing the math here on my hands. He was in sixth grade the last time Nebraska beat Iowa. So if you want to make it a Nebraska versus Iowa thing, and you want to think about it from a recruiting standpoint, and you want to know the impact of Iowa beating Nebraska 5 years in a row, look at these recruits whose memory in terms of following college football only goes back 3, 4, 5 years. My nephew's has no memory of Nebraska beating Iowa in terms of him actually paying attention to the game.
So do you think Scott's playing the game of, well, I know I can always offer this kid a walk-on, a preferred walk-on?
I think that's a legit, but and I say this in the sense of no offense to Scott or the rest of the Nebraska coaching staff or any coaching staff who plays this game. Yeah, I mean, I know where you're going with this question. Can they wait and hopefully if a kid like Isaac doesn't get a lot of really solid offers, I mean, maybe he picks up a so-so 1AA offer, i.e. not South Dakota State, not North Dakota State, because those are good 1AA. Yeah. You get an offer.
Northern Iowa's good.
Northern Iowa's D2.
No, they're Division I double.
Are they 1AA? Yeah. Okay, I thought they were.
They
still
lost to
D2.
James Madison in the quarterfinals.
Gotcha. So yeah, so Northern Iowa, great program. Northwest Missouri State for D2 program, yeah. But from a program standpoint, really solid program. I'm not talking about those schools. I'm saying let's say you get a 1AA offer and it's Joe Bob State in Southwest Missouri or something. Not a North Dakota State, not a South Dakota State, not a Northern Iowa, somebody else. Yeah, I get it. Then all of a sudden that preferred walk-on offer, I think, becomes a reality, becomes something that he'd consider. But the problem with it is that I think you got to be really careful with that. I mean, I guarantee you Nebraska's got to be, in my mind, I think they're playing that game, that they're sitting there going, yeah, you know what, God, maybe if he doesn't get a D1 offer, maybe if he gets some so-so 1AA offers, maybe if he even gets some so-so D2 offers, we get him as a preferred walk-on.
I think they
hold out on that. The problem is then I look at a school like Iowa who's saying, hey, we kind of moved you, like we haven't had a real good chance to take a look at you yet. We just started taking a look at you. And when we first started taking a look at you, we've kind of got our big board of guys that we're really looking at hard. And you're on that now. You're on that list of guys that we consider as, hey, this is an offerable guy. This is somebody we're going to seriously consider here in the next few weeks to months.
So, I don't want you to speak for your brother, but you're going to have to. Of all the places they've gone, what's impressed them the most? Has it been Nebraska? Has it been K-State? Has it been Iowa? What do you think? What do you think school has impressed them the most?
Everybody's got some different things. He said Wyoming surprised him a lot because you go back to the Wyoming that my brother and I grew up with. And I remember Terry Keneally, who's All-American D-tackle for Nebraska, that was in my recruiting class. I remember Terry telling me he took a recruiting trip to Wyoming, and he said you'd go to the game, and there was like a few hundred diehard Wyoming fans down around the lower bowl of the stadium, and then everybody else was watching the game but standing up on the upper bowl with kind of those old radio headsets where it was the radio and headphones kind of built into one, trying to get a signal so they could listen to the Nebraska game while they were watching the Wyoming game. My brother said that's completely changed. And he said very, very nice facilities there in Laramie. He said they've done an incredible job of upgrading and they're only going to get better. He said K-State was very nice. He said they did a great job. The facilities upgrade, again, since we played, has been astronomical in Manhattan. Same thing with Iowa. He said from a facility standpoint, Iowa is not second rate in any way, shape, or form to Nebraska from a facility standpoint. He said in some ways they had a few things that he thought were actually a little bit better from kind of the layout of some of their practice fields and things like that. The one thing that he said that really impressed him, though, he said this especially about K-State and about Iowa. He said easily the most personable programs. He said those were the two places that knew exactly who Isaac was. Those were the programs that you walked in and everybody's just like, John, how you doing? Isaac, what's going on? And John said his first intuition is to look down. Oh, they're just looking at my name tag. And then he realizes I haven't even been given a name tag and everybody knows our names. He said that was Iowa. He said that really impressed the two of them about their trip to Iowa. And it was just, they were there for a few hours to watch a bowl game practice. That was it.
Did they get to go through the facilities and all that stuff?
Oh, yeah. So he said they took them through the entire facilities. You met the coaches. So he said he didn't talk to Ferentz much. Said hi, but he said they talked to kind of the coach that, I think it's LeVar Woods, that covers Nebraska for, that's the assistant coach, longtime Arizona Cardinal. But that's who covers Nebraska for recruiting. And then is it Polisek, the O-line coach?
He's been at North Dakota State.
Okay. So they talked a bunch with Polisek. And he said again, then you got to sit there and watch practice, which here's the interesting thing. Remember Mark Banker's comment? I bet their practices are bloodbaths.
Yes.
That one.
Yeah.
Talking to my brother and my nephew, he said that he said you would be shocked at the amount of one-on-one offense versus defense, first team versus first team, lining guys up, just one O-lineman against one D-lineman, pass blocking, run blocking. He said the physicality was impressive. Hmm. He said they get after. Now, he said Polisek told him, hey, this is one of our last big full pad hardcore practices of the year because bowl game's coming up. Is it Friday night?
It's Friday night, yeah.
Yeah, so Friday night against USC. So the bowl game's within less than a week. And this was just we're recording on a Sunday.
Yep.
It wasn't yesterday, Saturday. It was the previous Saturday, but so they were less than 2 weeks out from the actual bowl game, so they didn't want to kill everybody. But my brother said the physicality of the practices is impressive.
So you got big plans for Christmas, New Year's? What are you doing?
Yeah, we're sticking around. All right. So we both my wife and I, most all our families in the area, so we're going to stick around, hang out, probably eat too much, drink too much, make fun of each other. It'll be good. So my kids are ecstatic because they end up, between my wife's side of the family, we kind of do our own thing for a Christmas. Then we do my side of the family. My kids end up with three different Christmases, so they think it's awesome.
No kidding. That is awesome. I'm good. All your kids are home now. I got three of my kids home. My daughter comes home. My oldest comes home on Monday, and I'll have to talk to her because they just hired a Husker in Ole Miss.
New volleyball coach.
I'll have to tell her that.
So. Yeah, they got Caleb Banworth as the new volleyball coach.
You got Caleb Banworth and you got Lane Kiffin.
Oh, that'd be interesting.
Does he win there?
Kayla, I think, is going to go down there, and she's going to be like another Christy Johnson up at Iowa State or somebody like that. Because she's going to go there, going to build a very nice, very solid volleyball program. God, I don't know about Lane, dude. Lane in my mind is like, he's like the evil genius version of Harbaugh. There's so much shtick and it's all about Lane.
Well, there's some truth to that.
I think this is going to be another disaster. Like the guy leaves a disaster wherever he's at. He should hole up in some place like Florida Atlantic and just stay there forever.
Well, he had a really good team. They beat SMU yesterday. I mean, that was a good team.
Yeah, he's. Like I said, I think he's in a place like Florida Atlantic. He's in a spot where he can just sit back and shine, and revel in Twitter awesomeness.
Yeah, you're probably right.
I mean, the guy. I'm not kidding you. The guy's the Donald Trump of college football coaches.
That's a good analogy.
It's like half shtick, half humor, half like. Good God, what the hell did he just tweet? But it's like, as long as he's like sequestered down there in Boca Raton, he can't really hurt anybody. You get him up at like a big SEC school, he's going to get there and he's going to cause some issues, dude. It's going to be a problem.
My daughter works in student housing at the University of Mississippi, and enrollment's been down because they say football's not been performing. So they need... They need some oomph in their football
program.
They
needed a splash higher, and this created a splash. I just, like, I worry about the fact that this is like that cannonball that splashes all the people sitting next to the pool that didn't want to be splashed.
Merry Christmas to all. Happy New Year. This will be the last time you hear from us in 2019. Don't worry, Dr. Rob and myself will be back in 2020 with many more podcast episodes on the Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy. Speaking of our sponsors, I do want to thank them one more time, because without them, this podcast would not be possible. The Remington Trophy. Dave Remington is the one who came up with this idea. He's been a supporter of this podcast since day one. And Dave, we thank you so much. And your event, January 18th at the Rococo Theater, is one of the finest events the state of Nebraska has. Plain and simple, nobody puts on a better event, and we thank you for your support. Infusion Brewing Company, the Czech Beer Hall, now open.
We still got to do a podcast, because I've had a lot of people asking on Twitter, are we going to do a podcast? And I've told them, we're going to do one from the beer hall.
Yeah, we'll do one from the beer hall, probably in early 2020. I think maybe this week sometime, you and I slip down there and have a beer.
You can check it out.
Yeah, and check it out. Just, I'm cool just with to that. See where we want to sit for our podcast. Exactly. Right? Well, we kind of see, but yeah.
It's a scouting trip.
The new Czech Beer Hall is open. It's in the old Bohemian Cafe. Make sure to check it out, because they put a lot of work into it. Has that authentic feel to it, and I think you'll be very, very impressed. Chad and Jessica, Ticket Express, they did Ticket Talk all year long with us. I know when you need tickets, when I need tickets, I go to Ticket Express. Go to TicketExpress.com. Scotty over at Husker Hands had a big autograph signing the other day. They had a bunch of players in. That's what I like about Scotty, is that, you know, he gives these guys who are graduating a chance to make a little extra cash, saying, you know what, we know that you put in a lot of hard work.
It's a good thing. I mean, it's a good outreach thing for the players. It's a good outreach thing for the customers.
Yeah. And then Husker Max. Of course, it's very nice of David Max, who, you know, he even supports other podcasts. But it's very nice of him and his team to be able to put this out for us on a weekly basis, especially during the season. So we appreciate all our sponsors. We appreciate you, everybody who listens to this show, because it's a lot of fun. I know a lot of you get annoyed with me because I'm an Iowa fan and I'm open about it. But
I thought you hated Iowa State. Oh, and Jesus. Nebraska.
Here we go. Yeah, well, it depends on which show you listen to. It really does. I purposely didn't bring up Hayden Fry here, all right? Because we could have had a long conversation about Hayden Fry. But this is a Husker Doc Talk podcast. For Dr. Rob Zadisk, I'm Travis Justice. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. We'll talk to you next year on the Husker Doc Talk podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy.